Good morning, and St. Patrick's Day is just around the corner. So, Steve Dale's Pet World, what do you think the most popular Irish names for dogs are? I will get to that in a little bit. You know, so many of you have emailed me with concerns, and I think valid concerns, about whether our dogs or cats can get or give us COVID-19, the coronavirus. Now, I talked a bit about this last week on the show, but I thought, okay, this week we'll address it again because I'm overwhelmed with your questions about this, which, again, I understand. So Dr. Gail Golab of the American Veterinary Medical Association will be here. Something else I've talked about, and that is homeowners and renters insurance, something, well, probably we should all have, but what if you have a dog? And what if that insurance company says, well, we're not going to insure you because you have a certain dog breed? What? That's crazy. Or we're going to charge you more money. And it's been going on for years. And Linda Holmes is here, Senator representing the 42nd District, Illinois Senator Linda Holmes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, what I said is true, and it's been going on for decades now, where for homeowners or renters insurance, insurance companies have said, well, you have a certain breed, and that breed list varies from company to company, and we're either not going to insure you or we're going to charge you more money for it, and you're sponsoring a bill that essentially says you can't do that anymore.
Exactly, because we have the difficulty in assessing, unless you received your dog from a breeder, you don't even know what breed the dog is. So some dogs are being unfairly targeted simply because they look like another breed.
Okay, that's fine. Let's talk about that. So, and this is just one aspect of it, and we'll get to more in a moment. So this is a true story that I related when Lidi Vankavage of Best Friends was on with us, who's an attorney who's helping to sponsor this bill. But you are the legislative sponsor for the bill, for which I thank you, because things like what I'm about to describe happen all the time. And an insurance appraiser comes out and says, oh, by the way, you have a dog. I love dogs. And then writes down that this person has a pit bull. Well, it turns out the person had a German short-haired pointer, not even close. And actually, there are a couple of studies out, one I think from Cornell, that indicates that even veterinarians and dog groomers, dog trainers, people around dogs all the time, oftentimes don't get the breed right. And that is what you were referring, I believe, those sorts of stories.
Yes, exactly. I was, for several years, a volunteer at the Naperville Humane Society. So, of course, when you get an animal in, you're going on what the characteristics to try to identify the breed. Yet I will tell you the most telling thing, and unfortunately, I'm sorry we're on the radio instead of in person, because it would be great if people can see this. When Lidi Vankavage with Best Friends and I have been discussing this in Springfield, she has a couple sheets of paper with over a dozen pictures of different dogs on them. And on those pages, it's like, okay, can you pick the pit bull out of here? Or can you tell which of these animals is not a pit bull? And I will tell you, even as a shelter volunteer who thinks I'm pretty good at sort of guessing what breeds are, there was one whole page where there wasn't a pit bull on it. And I would have said over half the dogs on there were pit bull mixes.
Exactly. All right, so let's talk about pit bulls. Let's say we could identify correctly what dog is a pit bull. The problem is we can't, and it doesn't matter, and here's why. We know, again, through genetic testing, that most dogs, the overwhelming majority, except the American Staffordshire Terrier, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, some fancy American Kennel Club breeds, or the American Pit Bull Terrier, most people don't have those dogs. They have dogs that you could look at the dog and say, that's a pit bull. The dog can vary from around 18, 20 pounds all the way up to 70 pounds. That dog is almost always a mixed breed dog. We know that now.
Right.
So the insurance companies are then saying, it's a mixed breed dog. We don't know anything about the dog's lineage, yet based on the way the dog looks, we are going to make a certain decision.
Right. I mean, and unless you actually do DNA testing, you're not going to know what breed that dog is. And that's what we're trying to prevent, people making snap decisions based on somebody telling them, even a veterinarian telling them that that is a, and I hate this whole pit bull thing. I mean, if it's some sort of a terrier mix, pit bulls are terriers. So they are, and they are not inherently bad dogs. There is not one breed of dog out there that you can say, oh, these are all the bad apples in the dog world, because they're not. You can even have some of your friendliest dogs bite if provoked. And you can have some of those breeds that people tend to sort of think so negatively, your Rottweilers, your Dobermans. Those animals can be just as loving as your golden retriever, which can also turn on you and bite you in some cases.
I guess. What you're saying is right. I mean, it's all the individual. It's not the breed, even if the breed is identified correctly in the first place. I mean, you're right. Totally correct. The other thing that confuses me is that, say, an insurance company in Illinois says, okay, you can have an Australian cattle dog. It's no problem. We're not going to charge you more money. That same insurance carrier, maybe 20 miles away over the border in Indiana, says, oh, we don't allow Australian cattle dogs. I mean, there's no consistency, and I would argue no rhyme or reason for many of these decisions the insurance carriers are making, except people who have dogs oftentimes are the losers.
Absolutely, and that's exactly the reason it was Leedy with Best Friends brought this idea to me and said, we really need to do something about this and not have insurance companies being able to deny somebody from having insurance simply because they think they have a certain breed of dog.
Now, the insurance companies, of course, and the insurance lobby is pushing back and saying, well, we have data. But I would argue that, let's use that Australian cattle dog example. If the data, for example, if I don't know if you have a teenage son or have had a teenage son who has ever driven a car, but they are charged more money because we know the accidents are more likely to occur. But that's true in Iowa. It's true in New Jersey. And it's true in the state of Hawaii. However, the Australian cattle dog, which is the same breed in Illinois as it is in Indiana, as it is in New Jersey, as it is in Hawaii, the insurance companies for dogs make these, again, seemingly random decisions are based on data that they sure don't share with anyone, as opposed to actuarial data that, for example, I'm using the driver example. Do you get the gist of what I'm saying?
Absolutely. But I go back to, again, the problem is even in identifying what that dog really is. I mean, we're not even starting with the basic. If they want to deny on breed, no one really knows what the breed is.
Correct.
So, unless you have it DNA tested.
Yep. And even if it is DNA tested, it doesn't tell us about the individual temperament of that individual dog. Because as you point out, saying the dog is a Mastiff, saying the dog is a Dalmatian, saying the dog is a miniature poodle says nothing really about the temperament of that individual dog. So knowing all of what we have just talked about, what are you attempting and I hope succeed in doing?
So what we are working on right now, and we're actually working with the insurance lobbyist simply because it makes the most sense. So we've gone into about 3 amendments now trying to work this out. And I think we will eventually get there. But basically, the very bottom line is saying that the insurance company may not ask about a specific breed of dog that you will be having on the property. They can ask you the number of dogs you have. They can ask you if the dog has been sterilized. They can ask you if the dog has ever been deemed vicious. And there I could see where they might have an idea of either charging you an astronomical amount or rejecting you, but not based solely on the breed of the dog. And that's as simple as I can break this down.
So I think that most people with a dog would agree with you because we know. And so many have experienced this happening. I was talking to John Williams with Leedy on the radio about this about a week and a half ago, and we were inundated with phone calls, and I've received the emails of people who said, well, this has happened to me. So if you are supportive of what you're talking about, Senator Holmes, how can people help?
Very simply, I mean, what's always a good idea is to write or call or email your legislator and tell them you would love them to either sign on to the bill or certainly be willing to vote on the bill when it comes to the floor. And by the way, it's Senate Bill 2462.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a fair amount of co-sponsors at this point, which is nice to see.
All right.
But that's always the best way. I mean, and call your own legislators simply because you're the one who actually votes them in or out of office and let them know that this is something you support.
Indeed. And I have more information on my website, and that's stevedale.tv, including a link to a place where you can write your own story if this has happened to you, because I know you're asking for those stories to point out to the insurance lobby this really is an issue. Senator Holmes, I am so glad Illinois is once again becoming a humane state, and you're doing the right thing, of course. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you calling and letting your listeners hear the details of this bill, because I would love to have their support.
You got it. You got it from me. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you. A hoot and a holler to ya. Happy St. Patrick's Day. So I asked earlier, I said, I don't sound very Irish, really, do I? I try. We're all Irish on St. Patrick's Day, right? Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, where the question was this. The most popular Irish dog name for female and male dogs. So the answer, Bailey for girl dogs. And for male dogs, the answer is Lucky, of course. Like a four-leaf clover. Magically delicious. Yes, I did. I got one of those. They have special Lucky Charms for St. Patrick's Day. And I admit, that and a green milkshake from McDonald's. I do it every single year. I don't even like it anymore. But I do it because it's my tradition. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN Radio. So many of you, and I'm glad you're doing this. It's a valid concern. Want to know, hey, listen, is it possible for my dog or my cat to get COVID-19? That's the novel coronavirus. And there are so many people offering their point of view and their perspectives online. And I thought, you know what? We absolutely need to go to the direct source, the American Veterinary Medical Association, a friend of this program and a friend, I must say, Dr. Gail Golab, Chief Veterinary Officer of the American Veterinary Medical Association, is here. Dr. Golab, good morning. And I think we should start this way. Veterinarians have known about coronaviruses for a very long time. Dogs get their coronavirus, the canine coronavirus. It's a pretty benign thing, happens mostly with puppies in overcrowded situations. Cats, similarly, a feline coronavirus that is so benign, usually we don't even know it's happening. Am I right about that, that veterinarians have known about coronaviruses, indeed, forever?
So, Steve, that's absolutely right. And let me say, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you. So thank you for giving us this opportunity. So, yeah, dogs and cats get coronaviruses pretty commonly. But this particular coronavirus that we're talking about that is infecting people is different from those coronaviruses. And so it looks like that this particular coronavirus probably originated in bats before it ended up in people.
Bats, and then may have mutated to a species most of us never knew about called a pangolin, which is either a relative, depending on which book you look at, of the armadillo or a relative of the anteater. They kind of have their own genus, I think. Most endangered species on the planet. But in any which case, it mutated to jump species, which on occasion viruses do, correct?
That's correct. It's not common at all. And although it certainly over the past decade or two, it has become a bit more common as we have seen relationships between people and animals become closer, and particularly having people more closely exposed to wildlife, for example. We are seeing a bit more of this, but routinely it isn't something that happens commonly.
Right, and at least two of the human coronaviruses came from the wet market, presumably in China, which is a whole different topic and a whole different subject as to the way in which food is prepared and the fact that wildlife is there, which is, in my view, is unfortunate. So we get coronaviruses too. Some of those coronaviruses, as I understand, we just call the common cold.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. But what has created particular interest for this coronavirus, aside from its greater impacts in people, is the occurrence of the dog in Hong Kong that was actually tested for the virus. Tested for the virus because it was a dog that was owned by and in close contact with a human being who was suffering from COVID-19, which is what we call the disease associated with this coronavirus. And what they have found over the course of progressive testing over a number of days is it does look like there's a possibility that that dog has a low level of infection with the virus. But what's equally important, and perhaps more important, is the fact that that dog has not become sick with that virus. Nor is there any evidence that that dog has been able to spread that virus either to other dogs or to people. And so that's really, really important for people to understand. The other thing that we have learned is that in the process of developing some tests for this virus in dogs, other companies have not had positive results of testing. And so at this point, it looks like we've got that one particular dog still under investigation, but is believed to have a very low level of infection. But incredibly important that people understand that that does not mean that that dog or that any dog has the potential to spread that infection to its owners.
Do we know anything at all about cats?
So at this point in time, we don't. The only thing that we can say, speculate, is that certainly there has to be a substantial number of cats that have been exposed to their owners that have been sick with the virus. And we also know that in the process of developing these tests, we also have had cats that have been tested and have not seen any of them be determined to be infected either to this point in time.
So you're talking about a diagnostic laboratory that is very well known in America that has tested animals. And so far, they've come up happily, so far anyway, with no positives, correct?
Yes, that's what they were reporting as of this morning.
All right. So that's really good news. Having said that, based on an abundance of caution, based to some degree on advice that you probably would have given even if I interviewed you before COVID-19 existed, because some of it's common sense that maybe we don't do a very good job of adhering to on a daily basis as pet owners, would you give advice then, broadly speaking, to pet owners about how to interact with their companion animals, given what we know about COVID-19, which mostly, with the exception of one dog, is, well, so far, no worries, combined with the common sense advice that I speak of?
Exactly. And you're absolutely right, Steve. Totally aside from the coronavirus disease that we're talking about now, it's just really good practice when you're interacting with your pet to wash your hands. And that's just good practice, period. We all should be washing our hands more than we do. If we did that, we'd be preventing the spread of a great deal of disease. So, and particularly if you do become sick with COVID-19, it would be a good idea both for the well-being of your dog, because you want to make sure that it gets the absolute best care, and it's difficult for you to do that if you're not feeling well. But also to protect others, to make sure that you do the best you can to have somebody else in your household care for that animal while you are sick. And with the exception of service animals, it's not a bad idea to even separate yourself to the degree that you can for that animal until you're feeling much better and can enjoy it as you usually do.
But having said that, for the people, which is most of us happily, that have no signs of illness, you know, you turn on the TV and boy, you get stressed out. You look at your app and see what the stock market is doing and oh boy, you get stressed out. One relief of stress that is a non-pharmaceutical that works really well, we know, is just hearing our cat purr in our ears, petting our dog, taking our dogs for walks. There is no reason, I presume, not to continue doing any of that.
No, not at all. And you're absolutely right. In times like these, we can all use support for that stress. So, no, definitely. No reason not to take your dog for a walk. No reason not to pet your dog. But again, just, you know, use good practice because there's other, even if we're not talking about COVID-19, there are some other diseases that can be spread between people and animals. And so whenever you're handling animals, you should be washing your hands.
Yeah, which is a good idea. As you said, a good idea is something we should have been doing all along. And maybe now we pay more attention to what veterinarians like you have been advising for as long as you've been a veterinarian. Chief Veterinary Officer with the American Veterinary Medical Association, Dr. Gail Golab, I do want to point out this is a fluid situation. Things are changing. And with that, the American Veterinary Medical Association website changes, avma.org, for all of the updated information, avma.org. Dr. Golab, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve, so much.
You know, for an island nation that's just under 33,000 square miles, Ireland has more of their wee bit of Irish dogs. That's not very, that didn't sound Irish, did it? A wee bit of Irish, no, I don't think I can do it very well, can I? But they do. I mean, they have a lot of dog breeds that hail from Ireland, considering how small Ireland is. Many more than from America, incidentally. So here they are. The Glen of Amal Terrier. Have you heard of that breed? It's one of the few dogs that's longer than it is tall. Can you think about that? The Dachshund is another one, of course. The Irish red and white setter. The Irish setter, of course, beautiful, beautiful dogs, both of these dogs. So of the four setter breeds, the red and white is actually the smallest. The Irish setter is just a fun dog to have. But both of these dogs need people. They have a lot of energy, but they need people around. So if you have a lifestyle where you're gone all day, every day, this isn't the best dog choice for you. The Irish Water Spaniel. This is one of the oldest dog breeds, around for well over 1,000 years. Of course, they love water. They're about 20 to 30 pounds approximately. The Irish Wolfhound. That dog, you know what that dog is? Up to 31 inches long, standing 6 feet tall on its hind legs. Certainly taller than I am on any day of the week, unless I'm standing on a step stool. They can weigh about 150 pounds. They were originally bred, actually, like the name sounds, Irish Wolfhound, to hunt wolves. But today they are wonderful pets, far more laid back than a wolf hunter would be, and maybe not best for a studio apartment, but given a little bit of elbow room, they make wonderful pets. The Kerry Beagle. So we think of the Beagle, like Snoopy. We think of the Beagle that is from America with those floppy ears, very cute dogs. These look so much like the American Beagle, but in fact, they are unrelated, believe it or not. The Kerry Blue Terrier. This dog has a very unique coat. And some of these terriers, like the soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, that's another one. For a lot of people with allergies, these dogs can do very, very well. Those are the Irish dog breeds. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.